This is the Rental Income Podcast, where we talk to owners of rental properties and give you actionable tips and advice that will help you make more money while dealing with less hassle. And now your host, Dan Lane.
I put together a list of 7 things I wish I knew earlier about renting properties, and you can download your free copy. Just go to my website, freelandlordgift.com. Today on the show, I want to share 5 different ways that you can make more money with your rentals without raising the rent, because raising the rent isn't always an option. A lot of times, if you're priced at the top of the market, there's no room to raise the rent, or the place is just going to sit there. So my guest today has actually written a book on 40 different ways that you can make more money without raising the rent. So I want to welcome Al Williamson to the show. And Al is actually a listener of the Rental Income Podcast. And Al and I have talked over email a few times. And Al told me that he wrote this book. And I said, Al, we got to get you on the show to share with our listeners some of these tips on how they can make more money. So Al, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dan, thank you for having me.
Yeah. So you've come up with 40 different ways that you can increase the net income to your rental property. So how did this come about?
This is a long process, but really what really made me focus on it was in 2008, when everything was just going to hell. tenants were having a hard time paying. But I thought, you know, I really enjoy landlording, but it'd be great if I wasn't so dependent on the tenants.
Right.
My goal, of course, is to pay for my entire first mortgage without using the tenant's rent.
That's great. And how many rentals do you have right now?
I have a 8-unit building and a 2 single-family homes.
Okay.
And that's a funny question. That's a funny question, because a lot of people, you know, I blog about landlording, and they would expect me to have a large portfolio. But the focus on net income, you know, more rentals just means more expenses.
Right.
How profitable you are. My properties, of course, perform like twice as many pieces of rentals. Like my 8-unit performs like 15 units equivalent.
That's great, and you're right. That's all that matters. You know, a lot of people get hung up on the numbers, but your profitability is really all that matters. I mean, having fewer units that make you more money is less hassle, and the money you're putting in the bank is really all that matters.
Right.
Let's get into some of these ideas that you have on how you can make more money without raising the rent. I've read your book, and one idea that I really like, that I don't know why more people aren't doing this, is charging pet fees. I do this personally. I make an extra $125 a month. My tenants have 2 dogs, and I charge them pet rent, basically. So charging $125 a month, how am I doing? Is that in line with what most people are charging, or should I charge more, or is that too much?
Well, it you know, it's all over. It's whatever your market can withstand. You know, I'm sure you benchmark your prices based on what you thought you could get away with and what was competitive.
Yeah.
So it varies in different markets. If you're out in the country where dogs are plentiful, then you may not be able to get away with it. But it sounds like to me you played the card that you had at your disposal very well. Some people do $25, you know, per cat. If it's a higher risk that your insurance, you can say your insurance is going to go up because you have a pit bull pet, then you can charge even more.
Yeah, and so that's a good point. So I know a lot of landlord policies will exclude pit bulls and Rottweilers. So there are policies that you can get for more vicious breeds?
I imagine, I haven't researched that piece of it, but just like anything in the market, you just have to pay a little bit more for it.
Right, okay.
Okay. Around for it.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's a good, you can always base your pet fee on that. It's going to cost you more to insure the property. But Dan, as I was looking into the whole pet fee-ish topic as a tactic, the pet registration fees caught me by surprise. And the pet interview fee as well. So there's a you can charge a fee to just like an application fee for the pet.
I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, so that's another one.
Like a one-time non-refundable fee. So you can say there's a $50 fee plus $25 a month or whatever you're going to charge.
That's right.
That's a great idea. Now, one thing you mentioned in the book is not to say non-refundable deposit. So what do you mean by that? Explain how that works.
So if you're refunding the deposit, that's not helping your net income.
Right. Okay.
So you're just looking for a fee for a service. And also the whole concept of fee, I was initially against writing about it because it's so well covered, but it allows you to do your non-standard things, the things that are irritant to the landlord. Well, the fee process allows you to be compensated for your time and aggravation.
Sure.
So okay. From that approach, I said, hey, we need to look at this real close.
All right. So another thing that you mentioned in the book is corporate housing. So instead of renting to actual tenants that are going to live in the house, rent to a company that is going to use the house, I guess, for like out of town executives, or like what would the company do with the house?
Yeah. So this is a big topic, and there's many different forms of corporate housing, but you're right. In general, it's a furnished place that you want to rent directly to a business, and they find value in it, especially if there's more than one person, that's their one high-end person. If you give them, if everyone has their own bathroom, say you have a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house, mm-hmm. then you can put 2 executives in there comfortably.
Okay.
A service and show a savings to the business for a comparable hotel.
They're benchmarking the price against a hotel for the night versus what other rentals are going for in the area generally?
That's right. It's a high-end hotel alternative. If you're in a hotel for several weeks, you know, you just get tired of people coming into your space, and you feel more at home if you could just customize it and feel it's not being intruded upon. Just make you feel more at home.
So how would you approach a company? Is it just calling up the HR department and seeing if they're looking for corporate housing, or what's a good way to get involved with that?
There's a number of ways. One is, of course, you find a company that you have good proximity to. And start with their HR department, of course. Also, networking, just working your network, you can find someone who has people flying in Monday through Friday, and approach those people. So it's almost as easy as talking to the person at your, you know, if your kid's in gymnastics, talking to those people about what they do, or mm-hmm. at the soccer game, you're with those parents anyway. You just naturally network your way to a business that has that type of workforce.
All right. So another thing you mentioned in the book is that you could rent upgraded appliances to the tenant. So I guess if you just had regular appliances and maybe they wanted stainless steel, you could charge them extra for upgraded. Okay. So,
yes.
So how much extra can you basically do or generally charge for that? Or how would that work?
So this again is a wide one. Some people have markets where washer and dryers, they have outlets for them, but they don't provide the washer and dryer.
Mm-hmm.
They give the option to rent the appliance to the tenant.
Okay.
Same thing with refrigerators and all those types of things, depending on what your market is typical in your market.
Okay.
And then it can go for upgrades. Of course, even for any market, like for example, my in Sacramento, California, you know, refrigerators and dishwashers, all that stuff is included for a single family home. But of course, you can show your tenant, what you can do for them, and also a menu of rental fees, what the fee will be for that appliance, especially if it's the latest and greatest thing. Absolutely.
How would that work over, like, as far as paying for it? What kind of break-even point would you generally be looking for? Like, so if the appliance was $400, are you trying to get your money back over a year or 2 years, or what do you generally recommend?
So, the landlords I've talked to about this, some of them have a rent-to-own type of thing so that they don't have to maintain the appliance if it breaks.
Mm, okay.
That's one angle that you can go after and say, hey, after 2 years, it is paid for itself, and then it's yours, and it's for you to maintain. Or you can price it so that it's attractive. And also, there's always a Craigslist exit for you, so you can always sell off.
Wow, that's great. Yeah. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. That's good. Okay.
Yeah. So it's a very big topic. I just kind of touch on it. But there's lots of different strategies, especially with the Craigslist exit. The nicer the appliance, the more you can charge per month, and the easier it is to sell off, to exit out.
All right. So the number four thing I wanted to talk to you about is, and I think this is a really interesting idea, and you mentioned that you were going to be experimenting with this, but renting out storage space at the property to people that aren't residents at the property.
Yes.
So you would get maybe some storage containers, or like how would this generally work?
So there's a number of different ways you could do it. The way I was thinking about doing it is getting a prefab mini storage 10x20 unit just delivered. It's all steel. It looks exactly like you're going to your mini storage facility,
mm-hmm.
and just have them take it off the truck and place it on my property, and then I'm up and going. Yeah, and the reason being is in Sacramento here, California, you can place a 200 square foot building without a permit.
Oh, okay. So there's no zoning you need. Just do this. That's great.
You can just do this. And people, that's how they expand. They place these duplex, you know, there's two 10x10s connected side by side, and they just keep expanding 200 square feet at a time.
Okay.
Now I have an alleyway behind one of my properties that I was thinking about taking down part of the fence and putting up these, it looked like garage doors, you know, two garage doors, placing them there. And there's a number of websites you can list your mini storage. and that's what, you know, people just Google and they see a map with, you know, various pins on where these different facilities are. And 10x10s are the most popular ones, most ones in demand. So I figured that the way the collaborative economy is going, where people rather do business with other people, they wouldn't drive past my mini storage, my 10x10 facility, to go to a larger one 10 minutes away.
Right.
They want their storage as close to them as possible.
So how much can you generally charge?
The nation average is $1 a square foot, so it's very attractive.
Okay.
And of course, you want to benchmark off your local area to see what the going rate is. And just beat it by, just go at that same rate or price yourself a little more attractively.
How do you explain to tenants that, you know, the storage unit is back here and random people might be coming in from time to time? Do you think tenants would have a problem with that?
They would. You know, you have to use it for the right situation and, of course, block it off so that the public doesn't have access to the private spaces of the tenant.
Okay.
If it's against the alleyway, say you're replacing a fence line with these mini storages, then it's no problem.
Right. Yeah.
I wouldn't. Yeah.
That sounds like a really perfect situation, having the alleyway back there. You know, I just wonder how that would, or how a tenant would feel about that if it was just in the backyard and the only way to access it was to walk around the house.
That wouldn't work.
Yeah.
You may want to move your fence line or adjust your fence line so that gives a sense of privacy.
Right. Okay. The number five way, and you've actually tried this and it didn't work out too well, but I think it's an interesting idea, is selling Wi-Fi. So how do you do this? How do you sell Wi-Fi?
Well, we're all familiar with going to a coffee shop and buying a cup of coffee and them allowing you to use their Wi-Fi complimentary.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's perfectly legal.
Right. Okay.
Exchanging a service or a good for complimentary Wi-Fi.
So how would you make money off that?
So I was going to sell a newsletter, electronic newsletter, of just what's going on in the neighborhood. That's what they would pay for, and in exchange, they would get complimentary Wi-Fi service.
Now, could you actually sell the Wi-Fi to say you can have Wi-Fi for $20 a month?
Yes. There's a number of services that allows you to segment the commercial service allows you to segment your signal, and they monitor the accounts and handle the payments process and all those types of things. It's just right off the shelf these days.
That is good. So what kind of equipment would you need? Is it just like a special kind of router?
Yeah, so it's a commercial router. You need a license for it. I went to a regular small business installer that installs hotspots for commercially.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked through them to pick out the right system. I was trying to get a half mile radius and with a small antenna that I made up, and I placed it as high as I legally could above my building, which is one of the tallest buildings in my neighborhood. And
okay.
I would have, you know, this is the tree interference that really messed me up. When I have a straight line of service, I can get out a quarter mile, but there's so many trees and it's just not and buildings and things like that that cause interference that it didn't work out for me.
What about if you just had it in your building? So you said you have an 8-unit building. Like, what if you just had the Wi-Fi in the building and you priced it cheaper than they would get from the cable company or the telephone company?
That would absolutely work. I would recommend, if it's just for your building, that you call it complimentary and just add it to the rent.
Well, why
not worry about the commercial things like that?
Well, why is it better to do it complimentary and not charge them $30 a month or whatever you could charge?
Well, if the Wi-Fi has service or goes out, then
there's
a whole different level of expectation.
Right. Okay. Okay.
And also, there's equipment that I place on it that keeps them from doing some illegal things, downloading illegal things, and so there's restrictions. It's not fully accessible.
Well, that is interesting. So in your book, so it's called 40 Ways to Increase the Net Income of Your Rental Properties, and you've got a whole bunch of other ideas in there. So I definitely would encourage everyone to check it out. It's a real easy read, but just full of just really valuable information. And it's on Amazon. Is that the best way to get it? Okay.
That's the best way to get it.
I'll also put a link to your book on our show notes page. You can find that at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode30. All right, Al, it is time now for us to get into the lightning round. 5 rapid fire questions in 60 seconds. Are you up for the challenge? Do you think you can get all 5 questions in 60 seconds?
I've been training for this, Dan.
All right, well, let's do it.
Now, the Rental Income Podcast Lightning Round. 5 rapid-fire questions and answers in 60 seconds.
The first question is, what's your favorite real estate book?
Wealth Without Risk by Charles Gibbons.
Number 2, The number one fear that I hear from people all the time on why they don't want to own a rental property is they don't want to get a call at 3 a.m. that a toilet's clogged. As a landlord, have you ever gotten this call?
I have, but the lady has some mental issues.
Okay. Number three, if you had a property that was sitting vacant for 6 months, you had a potential renter apply that had horrible credit and a spotty work history, would you take a chance on them and rent to them or let the property sit?
I would never have a vacancy that long, and I would let the property sit.
Number four, if you could give one piece of advice to a new landlord, what would it be?
Bring your tenants.
And number five, would you rent a property to your best friend?
No, I would not.
Al, your training worked. Good job. We got it in. Got it
all
in.
Right.
So, Al, why don't you tell us the best way to get in touch with you? I know you've got a really good blog, and why don't you tell us where we can reach you online?
Yes, you could please check out my blog. It's called leadinglandlord.com, and you can contact me there at al@leadinglandlord.com.
Awesome. Well, if you are looking to get started in owning rental properties and you're trying to figure out all the different financing options and how you're going to pay for the rental property, I put together a training class that walks you through everything you need to know, talks about all the different financing options. If you want to learn more, go to rentalincomepodcast.com/finance. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.